Many people in our food community have been seriously impacted by Superstorm Sandy, and our hearts go out to them. At HRN, we've been covering these stories since the storm hit. To learn more, visit our website at www.heritageradionetwork.org. Today's program has been brought to you by Clarkson Potter Publishers, the only dedicated lifestyle group within Random House. Potter invites readers to live well. We seek tastemakers, visionaries, and rising stars and partner them to craft books and products that define their brand while engaging, entertaining, and instructing their audience. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to After the Jump. I'm your host, Grace Bonnie, and today we're coming to you live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. You can listen to the show live every Monday at noon on heritageradionetwork.org or download the podcast on iTunes. Today, my guest is designer, author, and TV host Tom Felicia. Tom is an acclaimed interior designer who broke onto the scene in a big way as the design guru for Bravo's Queer Eye for the Straight Guy, which won an Emmy. Since then, Tom has gone on to host two TV shows, design his own product and furniture line, write two books, and is about to release his third with Clarkson Potter, American Beauty, about transforming a home in the Finger Lakes. So Tom, thanks for being with us.
Hi, how are you, Grace? I'm so sorry for being so late. And by the way, this is the coolest place I've ever been.
I'm glad you're here. I'm so glad you're here. Don't worry about it. We're going to do a mega fast interview, but it's going to be great.
I love it.
So I want to start really quickly. I'm looking at your book in my lap right now with the dog, and I have a question about your dog.
That's Foxy.
We're going to get to Foxy in a second. I want to start first. I read that you started designing houses and drawing them in the sixth grade.
Yes, it's true. I actually met my best friend who lives right around the corner from here when we were kids. I think we were in fifth grade and we were walking home from school. We both had blueprints. So it was really kind of amazing that I started designing houses and drawing and drafting and all of that when I was really young.
What do you think drew you to like homes and interiors as opposed to any other type of design?
You know, I think it was just... It was my DNA. I was very intrigued by, well, we lived in a really old neighborhood with really great big old houses, and I wanted a skylight in my bedroom. And my parents tried to explain to me that there was a bedroom above my bedroom, and then above that was like a slate roof. So there was no possibility of me getting a skylight. So I was really committed to us moving out further into the suburbs so that I could actually have a skylight above my bed.
I love it. Did your friends think that was normal? Were your other friends in sixth grade also drawing houses?
You know, actually, you know, my friend John was, you know, he was really interested in architecture. My friend Julie, she and I actually drew a house together. In sixth grade, we drew a house together. Actually, in fifth grade, I got in trouble for drawing on my desk. I designed the exterior of a house, and I got in trouble for doing it because I did it while we had a substitute teacher. But then the principal came and took a picture of him and I and my teacher in front of the desk before they erased it. So I knew it was wrong, but maybe there was something good going on.
Talk about the writing on the wall / on the desk. Yeah, exactly. What you'd end up doing.
Literally.
So what was that transition like? You went to Syracuse. So yes. Did you sort of always see interior design as like the only path, or was that something?
No, you know what? I was really interested in industrial design and products. I was thinking about being an automotive designer.
Oh.
I was thinking about being an architect. I was thinking about being an interior designer. I considered going into textile design. At one point, a friend of our family's worked for Nike, and I was thinking that could be really cool and go out to Oregon and go to shoe school,
yeah,
and do that. That could have been really fun. So I knew design was what I was interested in. I mean, actually, just walking through, you know, where we are today, this is really cool. I literally was like walking through, like, oh my god, this is the coolest place.
It's a cool
ever
studio. It's literally like the reason I wanted to have a show here was because of the studio.
Yeah, no, this is so cool, and the restaurant's amazing. Mm-hmm. And I love how it's so anonymous when you walk up to it on the outside. It's like you'd never know that
exactly
this existed. But it's really, I'm really into those kind of details, mm-hmm, and I love the Afghan. I mean, ever since I was a kid, I've always picked up on, like, one of our neighbors had this really beautiful set of wine glasses that were really beautiful to me as a little kid. And when I bumped into the Thomas Meyers like years later, they were like, it's so weird that you loved those because they were Steuben and they were like the most expensive thing that we've ever bought. And you were like six and you were fascinated by them. And so it was just like, I just picked up, and it wasn't, and it, sometimes it could be something that's really like not terribly, you know, rare or unusual or expensive. It's just kind of noticing things that are around you. And I just assumed everyone when I was a kid did that as well.
Yeah.
But they, maybe they just didn't talk about it because I like to talk. So I thought maybe I was just a little more verbal.
Well, you think that's like a common thread that runs through design people. It's like, I feel like we obsessively notice details that other
right.
people
Absolutely.
Don't notice.
Yeah. And also, I mean, it's a good thing and a bad thing because when you're trying to relax and your weekend and you just, you know, you just can't stop looking at like what, like a curtain panel in your bedroom and you just all of a sudden jump out of bed and have to redo everything.
That's all I notice in movies. I just notice like the wallpaper in the back of something instead of the actual movie.
Sometimes I have to see movies twice because I watch the movie visually and then I am like, what did they just say?
Yeah.
I have to figure out what happened because I get so caught up in the visual.
So one of the things I really love about your design is the way that, for me, your aesthetic has been about making things more relatable and understandable and breaking down what sort of traditional, like, trade-only design and
Got
real
it.
People.
Yep.
How do you think you sort of push that accessibility forward in everything you do? Because you've written books, you have a furniture line. Is that something that you're always trying to keep in there?
Yes. One of the things we talk about a lot is called the democracy of design, and the idea that I love the idea that design is becoming, you know, sort of universal at a certain level. I mean, from the targets of the world to, you know, sort of high end, the automotive industry, the world of food and cooking, there's this mix of high and low, which I think is something that's very appealing to the sort of next buying power.
Yes.
Like I think that generation is all about mixing old and new, high and low. And I think that that's part of the vocabulary that we speak now. It's always been kind of, I think that's the way I'm programmed as a person, even with the people that I like to be around and the things that I like to do and the places I like to go. I think I like that really kind of that balance or that, you know, that kind of assortment, if you will. So I think that for me, I feel like bringing sort of the high-end world and sort of opening their eyes to that kind of idea, and also bringing people that are just looking at design maybe for the first time and are excited about it, and giving them sort of like kind of reaching out a hand to them and saying, come on, this will be fun, as opposed to making it feel a little bit more standoffish and a little bit less inviting.
Yeah. I think you struck that balance perfectly on Queer Eye. I feel like it's impossible not to talk about Queer Eye. I'm sure you're so sick of it.
No, I'm not at all.
But that,
not
I mean,
all.
That was my introduction to your work as well. I'll never see a room with a stripe around the center and not think of you.
Yeah.
What do you think were the main tips you were trying to teach people then that you're still carrying on now? I feel like you had like several strong messages.
I think my real focus with Queer Eye, and I'd love to talk about it. It was a great portion of my, you know, of my career and my life. I would say what I really like to explain to people is that to be thoughtful about your space and also have it be a reflection of who you are, sort of be an authentic reflection of who you are. And I think that sometimes when people have the luxury and the ability to design, you know, their interiors, they tend to design them for a sort of, to express sort of, you know, a time or a place that they don't live in or maybe who they think they want to be someday. And I really believe that interiors should be a real reflection of sort of where we are now in the world, kind of where you see things going, a little bit of, you know, kind of where you've come from and what your sort of DNA is about. But I think it should really be an honest reflection of your personality and your aesthetic and your point of view. And I think you should be able to sort of tell your story. It should tell your narrative, and you should be able to walk into a house without having anyone there. And you could sort of figure out who this family is or who this person is and really what they're about and what makes them tick. So
have you ever run into someone's narrative that was just really hard to tell visually? Well, I read in an interview that someone was asking you what's your style, what are your trends, and you said like, I'm interested in whatever my client's interested, like their style is what I'm focusing on. Have you ever run into a client style that was incredibly challenging to translate in a tasteful way?
I have to say, I think that it's more difficult when people don't have any information. You know, I always say, you know, like even, you know, I had a show called Tacky House. I would always say to people, you know, this is really tacky, but I think tacky is a million times more fabulous and more interesting than boring and dull and beige. Right. So I think you're already leaps and bounds ahead of that. So I think that I think the most difficult people to design for are people that really aren't really don't have their a vision of sort of who they are and what they're about, and they don't really bring any information to the table unless they're the kind, every once in a while you do, like every once in a while it's more typical with guys, you get a guy who's just like, I love your stuff, just you do your thing. And that's really fun too, because then you get to just sort of design based on the space and the lifestyle of the person, and it makes it really kind of fun and interesting. But when it's someone who has really no idea about what they want to do, they're not very confident, and they're, you know, a little bit insecure about who they are and what they're about, and they're really worried about what other people think, that often turns into a stumbling block after stumbling block after stumbling block.
I can imagine. Well, I want to ask you one quick question before we take a break about, you have two rescue dogs, right?
I do, too.
Which is one thing that just makes me instantly love somebody. Oh, I feel like it says a lot about you beyond your design. How do you integrate dogs into your design sensibility? I recently bought a cat tree, and I feel like I have a failed design fan because I can't believe I own something covered in carpet that stands like 6 feet tall in my house.
I bet it could be really cool, though. A design tree, one of those carpet cat things could be really cool. Like, there's a birdhouse on the High Line right near my apartment that is just, every time I see it, I just stop and I think, this is so unbelievable. And I think that you could actually, with the right carpet and the kind of right shapes.
I've thought about trying, we've been trying to do one with rugs or sort of sections of like beautiful Ecot rugs or
Like that'd be amazing.
Still going to get torn up. But what concessions have you made having pets in your life design wise?
I think it's the same thing people probably consider when they have children. I think that you just have to be, I think you have to make smart choices with certain fabrics and, you know, and things like that. But for the most part, I think I love my dogs more than I like my stuff. So I'd rather my dogs be able to enjoy our home and our boat and whatever else we, you know, do for recreation and fun. But I want them to be able to enjoy that stuff. And at the end of the day, it's not that precious, you know, and I don't treat it badly. And I ask the dogs as much as possible, try to relieve yourselves outside for the love of God. But at the end of the day, I feel like, a little patina is a lot with kids or animals is, I think, better looking than a house. It's so meticulously perfect that you feel like you just can't relax.
Yes, that's a wonderful way to put it, a little bit of patina. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back with Tom Felicia.
Today's featured book is American Beauty by Tom Felicia. Star designer Tom Felicia wasn't looking for another escape from his busy city life, but when visiting beautiful Skaneateles Lake in New York, where he had vacationed as a child, he fell madly in love with a fixer-upper. 2 years and one careful, respectful, and impassioned renovation later, it has become the house of his dreams, one that profoundly speaks to his happy memories of lazy days spent on the lake or in the small town as a child. Part memoir, part decorating book, American Beauty is the story of this house and an inspirational resource that imparts Tom's extensive wisdom on creating rooms that feel modern, yet meaningful and classic. American Beauty is $45 and available wherever books are sold.
Welcome back to After the Jump. I'm Grace Bonney, your host, and today I'm here with designer Tom Felicia. Before the break, we were talking about design styles, the lovely patina that having pets in your life adds to your design.
Patina.
I want to talk about the beautiful book that's sitting in my lap, American Beauty. This is your third book, right?
It's
book. And this is about renovating a home upstate. Tell me about this process.
Well, it's interesting. The story is really about, I live in New York City, and then I had a house in the Hudson Valley, 2 hours away from New York, on a great little lake. And I'm from Syracuse, and Skaneateles is kind of a summer community for families from that area, from that region, central New York. And anyways, a beautiful place. I love it, and I've always loved it. And two of my friends who live in New York getting married at the country club there. So I was up there for that. I was driving home there, saw the for sale sign. I was like, oh, this is kind of a great location. Drove in, saw the house, contacted a realtor, cut to, you know, ended up, you know, next thing I know, I'm standing there, I own this house. And I'm like, oh my God, I didn't sell my other house. And then like a week later, it was like in 2008.
Yeah.
It was like a week later, then the economy came a crashing halt. I was just standing like, what the heck? I mean, I cannot believe I did this. But anyway, so that's kind of how I got the house. And then I started renovating it, put my other house in the market. Finally, it sold, which was great, to a couple from Soho that loves it. And I'm actually still friends with them, which is really cool. But but this house was a really interesting journey because, you know, it was this house that was going to be torn down. Interestingly, it was being looked at by another person that works in television, which is so bizarre. So, and they were going to tear it down and put up a new house. And the house was built in 1917, and I really liked the house. And I bumped into the owner at this tavern, and I didn't know it was him. We were talking, and I told him I wasn't going to tear the house down, and basically he sold the house to me because of that. And I didn't realize I didn't know the sort of the background, but so the house is, so I saved the house kind of, you know, I guess you can call it, but, and it's cool. And it's really about taking something that's kind of like the ugly duckling and making it kind of, you know, beautiful again. And it's called American Beauty, not because it's the most beautiful house in America, because it certainly is not, but it's a great story about making something that's not relevant, that's irrelevant, and making it relevant again, and making it feel fresh and current for the way we live today, and making it make sense, and also being thoughtful about the environment while you're doing it. There's green aspects to the paint and the finishes, and also the house is now an Energy Star house, which is amazing for a house
that's fantastic. I love that you've always sort of kept the bones of the house in mind when you did that. The last summer house that you had, I know, is like permanently ingrained on the minds.
Yeah, I know. Everyone loved that house.
I was talking just before we came here with another editor from my site who remembers your bar area.
Yeah.
Is that sort of like this? I don't know. This like really burned in our brain image of like what an awesome bar looks like. It really is, and I feel like everybody's bar looks like that now. And that's
I love a good bar, by the way.
Who doesn't? What things do you keep in mind when you're trying to stay true to like the original feel and vibe and decade of like when the house came?
Well, I mean, first thing I think I chose this house really because of the environment that the house was in. And because I loved the environment, I took a lot of information from the sort of what was around me and what historically had been there and what's there now and what works, what doesn't work, and really took a lot of information from that. Then I looked at the architecture of the house, kind of dialed it back, figured out what it was from, what inspired the house originally, and so on and so forth. Then I thought about who I am, how I live my life, how I entertain. I have animals. I have, you know, we generally have friends up for the weekend and we're entertaining our neighbors and we're out in the boat and we're just kind of very active. So I designed it as well to work for that. And I think I'm a really good barometer for the way people live right now because I'm really focused on kind of like that sort of lifestyle arena.
Yeah.
So I feel like it's really about, you know, designing it sort of to function for what's important to people at this moment. And then, you know, just kind of pulling out of the architecture, pulling those details, And then also just thinking about how I was going to furnish the house and how I was going to do the layouts even before I figured out what the pieces were. Even though it's funny, I call the book an infomercial because a lot of the furniture and the rugs and the fabrics and everything's from my furniture line. Mm-hmm. And so it is kind of funny. When I first started decorating the house, I was like, oh my God, I kept calling it the infomercial. I was like, I cannot have put another piece of our furniture in this
room. Well, let's talk about the line. How did that come about? Did you feel like there were a distinct type of piece missing from the market? Or,
well, you know, I seriously did. What I really felt was missing is that I felt like there was just a huge gap between sort of to the trade furniture and what was available at retail. And it was just like you either had to look at a $1,500 sofa or a $6,000 sofa or up, you know what I mean? And there just wasn't a lot of good strong design in the middle. And there is some, but I just felt it was limited. And I really looked at it and thought, this is a great opportunity to, you know, design a collection of furniture that I think mixes really great style with, you know, smart price points and things that are maybe aspirational for people starting out and maybe a little bit more sort of a smart piece of furniture design or price point for someone who's already in the game, you know.
Exactly.
And it's, so I feel like it has the ability to connect with a lot of different people.
I love that you bridge the high-low thing, and I feel like it works really well for people who, like me, are renters but have sort of like interests in design. What do you think is like the connecting piece between either renters and first-time homebuyers or people who have a lot more money? Is there sort of a universal piece that you think people should have?
Well, I think that the connection between the first-time homebuyer and the renter is that you're most likely not going to be there for very long, you know?
True.
And so what you want to do is you want to invest in pieces that not only make sense with where you are now but will probably be able to make sense in another place.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't want to buy that like 27 foot, you know, sectional sofa, you know what I mean? Because it fits perfectly in your living room right now. Because that's maybe something you want to do in your third or fourth house where you might be there for 15 years. But when you're buying your first dining, and I always say buy the anchor pieces.
Okay.
You know, when you say bedroom, the word bed, there's your anchor. Dining room, the dining table, that's your anchor. Living room, the sofa, that's your anchor. Those are your anchor pieces, I think. You know, you think about which pieces sort of define that space. If you don't have a sofa in your living room, I kind of feel like you don't have a living room. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you don't have a bed in your bedroom, it's really just a room. Yeah. It's not a bedroom. And so a dining table not in a dining room or a dining space, you could have the chairs, but it's not really a dining space. So I feel like have those anchor pieces, invest in those. Be smart about the pieces so that they can translate hopefully into other areas. Also, sofas, if you're moving from an apartment to another apartment, be thoughtful about, is it a sofa that will be able to, base can come off, mm-hmm. or are the arms low enough that it can go in a lot of doors, turn corners, be put in elevators, carried upstairs or whatever. But that's what I would say is the kind of link between the first-time homebuyer and the renter, because I think the renter and the first-time homebuyer are almost a lot of times the same person.
Yeah, exactly.
One may have just, you know, decided to found a house sooner or apartment sooner than someone else, but I think it's kind of the same space.
Mm-hmm. I want to get back to the book really quickly. So the foreword was written by Tina Fey.
Yes.
And you've worked with her as well.
Yes.
You've worked with tons of celebrity houses, which I'm sure we all want to know lots of secrets about. What's the difference between working, or is there a difference between working with sort of a regular residential customer and a client that's a celebrity? Is there any?
I would say there is not. I would say, just like anybody else, you know, you can find somebody who's just, you know, your the girl next door can be lovely or a pain in the butt. You just don't know. And the same thing with someone who's recognizable for whatever reason, whether it's the mayor or Tina Fey or someone, like, you know, just someone that's recognizable in the world or community. So I think it's really the individual. You never know. I mean, you just kind of, as you're, it's like dating, kind of, you know, you just sort of, you hope for the best and you keep forging ahead. But it's, I would say she was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Tina and her husband Jeff were wonderful, and they were just delightful to work with. And she was so cool and generous to write the foreword for the book. She's exactly who you would want her to be and imagine her to be based on what you see of her in the world of media.
You made 9 million girls very happy. I think we all secretly want her to be as awesome as
she really is. I'm telling you. And because she's as awesome as you think she is, she's even that much more awesome.
That's awesome. So you've worked with Tina Fey. You've had multiple TV shows. You've written books. You have an incredibly successful design firm. What's on the horizon? What's left?
Well, I will say we're still working it out. You know, we're still, every day is still a challenge. I mean, we're still growing. It's, you know, the design business is still growing. We do commercial and residential design, but, you know, the business is still growing, and we're coming out of course, you know, a slow period in the economy. And I'm very excited about things are really improving. It seems like every month.
What are your dream projects? Like,
I really want to do a yacht.
Is there anything left?
Yes, I want to do a yacht. I want to do an airplane. I want to do, no, I'm just kidding. I mean, I really do want to do those things, even though I was saying that in sort of a little
jest. That would be nice if you could just do an entire airline from top to bottom.
Well, we're working with Delta Airlines right now.
Oh, that's
so hopefully. So hopefully they're actually, they are great.
It really is.
But we're doing outdoor, sky decks is what they're actually called. I mean, we're doing outdoor spaces, that's a lot of fun. So who knows? Maybe we'll be doing the interiors of the plane soon or something else. That'd be awesome. I'd even love to do like the outfits for, like, you know, the flight attendants.
That would be. Have you ever flown Porter Air? It's a teeny tiny Canadian airline that Tyler from Wallpaper Magazine, I think, has done from top to bottom.
Oh,
they
really?
All have adorable like pillbox hats.
Do you know what's so funny? I was just at a Pucci exhibit at the Syracuse University because I was there for an event that I did with them. And their Pucci exhibit, there used to be a Pucci store in Syracuse that was like one of the flagships.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it's kind of crazy. The gals in Central New York were loving Pucci in the 60s. But it was interesting because you could see he designed, he did the pillbox hats off to the side. So maybe that's where he picked that up. But Pucci did that. He also did clothes for Rossignol, ski clothes. And so he was doing a lot of interesting things back in the day. So I think, you know, and I love that he was more lifestyle than just mm-hmm. fashion. And that's kind of I'm an interior designer. That's my focus. That's really kind of what I love to do. But we're really focused on lifestyle in terms of, you know, now we're doing furniture. We're hoping to do accessories and lighting and, you know, bedding and all of that sort of thing. So that's kind of where we're heading.
That's great. We have 1 minute left, so I want to ask you one last quick question.
Okay.
I want to know a few of your favorite New York City interiors. They could be restaurants, hotels, anything. If someone's visiting and wants to sort of see New York through your eyes, what are your favorite places?
Well, I think the Four Seasons is really cool. That's a great, you know, I think they call it the pool room, you know, which is really great. It's very period. It's like really, it's very mid-century and very classic. And also there's something really great about that sort of area of, you know, Park Avenue with all of those kind of like the Seagram's building and all that sort of thing. So that's really kind of great for that kind of mid-century thing. I would say, what's another really great...
anything in Brooklyn, or is that a little too far out?
No. You know what hotel? I love the hotel. I can't.
The new one that just opened.
The other one. The one that looks at the city. That's kind of
Wife.
The Wife. That's
cube.
It. Yeah, the glass cube. That's the one. The Wife. That one is really.
That's a little bit of Manhattan come to Brooklyn. That's very much what it feels like.
I do love it though. I think it's a really.
Have
cool,
you been to that bar that's like on the second level?
Yeah. It's
that
very cool.
Amazing.
I have to say, I love this sensibility of where we are right now.
Yeah.
What's it called?
This is Roberta's.
Roberta's. It's fantastic.
Delicious pizza.
Delicious
pizza.
And
we're in a shipping
really
container
cool.
that feels like a cedar cabin.
Yeah. I kind of love it. But, you know, I mean, New York, gosh, there's so many places. There's so many. It's amazing what you can find. It's just sort of turning every corner. There's always, you know, from the financial district. I was actually, and I don't know if everyone can do this, but our client... is the head of Mellon Bank, and we went up into the tower of the Mellon. Oh my God, down in the financial district. It was unbelievable. When you think of like just sort of what was going on these top floors, these cocktail parties and dinner parties, very glamorous, sort of, you know, Art Deco.
Gotham City.
Yeah, very Gotham City. It's true. You're expecting Batman to sort of fly in the window. But so that those kinds of places are just incredible. I mean, I have to say, I really also love the memorial down at Ground Zero. I just think it's so powerful. I just think it really is amazing. And if you can get there to see it, it's pretty awesome.
That's great. Well, that's a good range of places for people to check out when they're visiting.
You can go to the top of Mellon Bank and get arrested.
Yeah.
You can get really, really depressed and go down to the Ground Zero. And then you can go have a lovely dinner up at the Four Seasons.
Exactly. Well, thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate you guys coming all the way down from
Thank
from
you. Upstate. And I'm sorry we were so late.
No problem. And thanks so much for listening, all of you. You can pick up Tom's latest book, American Beauty, on shelves this November from Clarkson Potter. Thanks so much for coming.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.